WCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Greer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, we will be talking with our special guests, us. That's right. We are going to be the guests of our own show. And if you're wondering why, it's because it's our 45th anniversary.
That's right, Di. We actually met 46 years ago, but we got together a year after we were friends. And what a journey it's been. The listeners are probably wondering, how did you make it? You were so young when you met.
That's right, Cher. How many times have we been asked how we have lasted so long? Every decade, we were asked that. And we will get to that and more. So stick around. But first, here's news and events from our Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of December 4th, 2022. As our country and the LGBTQ community continue to grieve the losses suffered at the Colorado Springs Club Q, two survivors of the shooting say they feel hope for the community despite the injuries they suffered in the attack. According to Edge Media Network, Ed Sanders, a 63-year-old who has patronized the bar for decades and even went to its opening night many years ago, was ordering drinks when a bullet hit him in the back. He saw the shooter. He got another bullet in the thigh. Sanders said, quote, I fell and everybody fell. He described the incident as being very traumatic. He talked about shielding another woman with his coat and about all of the chaos. Sanders said after the 2016 Pulse nightclub shooting, he considered something similar could happen at Club Q. The shooter's bullets missed his vital organs but broke a rib. He lost lots of blood and will require a skin graft for the wound on his back. But despite his injuries, Sanders said his survival made him happy and reinforced his belief in the LGBTQ plus people and their need for love. He said, quote, I'm smiling now because I'm happy to be alive. I dodged a major event in my life and came through it, and that's part of who I am. I'm a survivor, and I am resilient. I'm not going to be taken out by some sick person, end quote. Another survivor, James Slough, said his boyfriend and his sister Charlene were getting ready to leave the club when the shooting began. They were saying goodbye to people when one bullet hit him in the arm, another bullet hit his boyfriend's leg, and 13 bullets hit his sister. The shooter was taken down by a military veteran less than a minute after the shooting began, and after the chaos calmed down, Slough said he saw the bar become a community again. He saw patrons grabbing paper towels to help the bleeding victims. One man kissed him on the forehead as he lay on the floor. The man told him that he would be okay. President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden called the owners of Club Q to offer their condolences. The Bidens also voiced support for the LGBTQ community. They reiterated their support for the community as well as for their commitment to fighting back against hate and gun violence. They also thanked the owners of the club, Nick Goreska and Matthew Haynes, for all of the contributions that they've made to the Colorado Springs area since the club opened more than 20 years ago. Investigators are still piecing together a motive for the shooting. The 22-year-old suspect, Anderson Lee Aldrich, has been held in custody without bail, and prosecutors are weighing in on murder and hate crime charges. President Biden also called Richard Fierro last week. He's the hero who took the gunman down, along with other patrons, and held him until police arrived. The boyfriend of Fierro's daughter, Raymond Green Vance, was killed in the attack. In a statement after the deadly shooting, President Biden said, quote, gun violence continues to have a devastating and particular impact on the LGBTQI community across our nation, and threats of violence are increasing. We saw it 6 years ago in Orlando when our nation suffered the deadliest attack on the LGBT community in American history. And we continue to see it as an epidemic of violence and murder against transgender women, especially transgender women of color. And tragically, we saw it in Colorado Springs. This week, President Biden also reiterated his intention of passing legislation banning assault weapons. Republicans would likely block such a bill. And here from California, a new study from the Williams Institute at UCLA Law School finds that LGBTQ youth are disproportionately represented in juvenile corrections facilities. The majority of LGBTQ youth held in custody are girls, 64%, and youth of color, 72%, and they face a significantly greater risk of suicidal ideation, suicide attempt, and self-harm. Using data from the Minnesota Student Survey, that's a statewide population survey of youth, researchers from UCLA, Vanderbilt, Brown, and Yale universities examine the mental health experiences of LGBTQ and non-LGBTQ youth in juvenile correction facilities and public schools. Results showed that compared to straight cisgender youth in public schools, incarcerated LGBTQ youth were twice as likely to think about suicide, six times more likely to attempt suicide, and nearly four times more likely to engage in self-harm. Christy Clark, an assistant professor of medicine, health, and society at Vanderbilt University, said that interventions are needed to reduce pathways to incarceration for LGBTQ youth and to buffer the harmful effects of adverse childhood experiences. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moraglia.
I'd like to change the world, but I don't know what to do.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diane and Sheridan. And tonight as our guests, we have us, just like we promised. So, 45 years, Di. On one hand, it's hard to digest that number, and on the other hand, it's just so easy. So, people ask, how did you make it all those years, all these years? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
The first thing that we say all the times when people ask us that, and we say it's communication. Communication is so vital in a relationship. Meaning that there's all different types of way you can communicate, but one that's open and loving and respectful and, just trying to understand the other person, you know.
And it's not easy because I come from a family that didn't really communicate anything deeply. We never had trouble laughing and having fun together, but if there were any issues, we didn't tend to talk about them. They just ignored them, you know? And so I'm going to bring that into whatever relationship I'm in. And so that's what we discovered. That's what I discovered. My coping skills when I would get mad at you or angry or unable to tell you my feelings, I would just not talk about them. And they would just dissipate, I think. That's what I'm used to. That's what I was used to when I met you in the 70s.
Right. And maybe we'll get into all of that later on, how we dealt with that. But for me, it's the same way. In my family, we didn't communicate. And that was so important to me because there was a lot of things that were not said. You know, there was some mind reading going on, or it was just, it never felt right because I never had that experience of people talking to each other. I didn't see my mom and dad talking about issues and breaking them down or respecting each other in that way. And I always wanted that. And so when we got together, we had to learn how to do that dance.
And it was tough.
Yeah.
Because
I call it a relationship dance. Uh-huh. You know, even in my practice, I call it a relationship dance. Because otherwise, we're just stepping on each other's toes. And we had to learn how to get those steps right.
Yeah, and to bring that into more concrete example, I mean, any time that we would have an argument, I'd just leave the room.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to have an argument. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are afraid. I have been and was. I don't want to be in a confrontation, and I don't want someone upset with me, and so I just leave. Mm-hmm. And you didn't like that.
No, Yeah, because I didn't have anybody to talk to. You were gone. But I think we get triggered from our childhoods. And I think that's really important for people to understand that piece. Because I kept telling you all the time, Shara, I'm not your dad. I'm not your dad. I'm not your dad. I'm not going to yell at you. You know, I'm not yelling at you to yell at you. I'm just upset. It was more of me saying, please stay in the room. So I had to learn how to just say, Cher, when you run, when you don't talk about issues, when are we going to talk about issues? So we had to say, okay, you had to learn, Cher, okay, Di, I'm being triggered. I need a timeout. I mean, it's so important.
But that doesn't happen like the very first day or first year. I mean, how long did it take to get there? Because we didn't know.
Yeah, we had to learn. But I just realized, I just kept saying, like, this is not right. Why do you keep running? Stay in the room with me. I'm not going to do any damage or hurt you or anything. But something in you just, like, froze or something. And I had to learn that. And you had to learn that I wasn't a mean person, you know. I just wanted us to talk about these things that we're bickering about.
I think a lot of people leave relationships because communication is so difficult. And so what kept us in it? That's what a lot of people want to know. What, okay, you had these problems. You have the way you were both raised. I was raised with not talking about anything. No, there was hardly any yelling. And you were raised with a lot of yelling. And we get together and it's like, how do we stay together? What's the, people want like a recipe or a solution or something. And
well, the recipe, there's no one way of doing it. We just stuck with it. There's something deep down that I felt that there's a trust. I think maybe trust comes next, that we felt a certain way toward each other. We respected each other, and respect is another issue. But we can just mention trust right now. I guess we made a pact to be together. It was unspoken, but we were in relationship and we were starting this new relationship.
Well, we had a lot of things to do. I mean, we met in college. We met on the softball team back in 1976, and we had a lot of fun together. We did a lot of things together. We were friends for a year first, and we didn't have any of these conflicts. Because we weren't living together. And I think living together changes dynamics. And so we had that year of fun and frolic and playing softball and traveling and going out all the time. And then when we lived together, when we moved in together, I think that's when things started deepening. And
Yeah, because our differences, you know, and we speak about that too. Because we have a lot of similarities, but we have a lot of differences. Like, I wanted the room clean, right? And so you were like, no, Di, I can put my clothes everywhere. So
I never said that, Diana. I never said I can put them anywhere. I just put them anywhere.
Okay, well, okay. Unspoken. I could put them anywhere. And so that was like a simple argument that we would have.
And we still have it.
Yeah.
Because you're still clean, 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 and I'm still a little messy. I'm better. I'm way better. But I remember growing up and throwing all my clothes in the back of a closet. And I remember my mom giving us our clean clothes in the hamper, and we were supposed to fold them. And I didn't fold them. I just threw them in the back of the closet.
How did you get away with that?
Well, it was in the closet. No one saw it.
Oh, mine could be under the bed in the closet between the mattress. My mom would have known.
My mom did not come into our room to check on anything.
My mom checked. That's why we had to do it.
Oh, and my gosh. So you were like, your mom got you in good habits.
My mom got me in good habits. And I love those good habits because you and I, we are totally different around a lot of those things. But, you know, but you're 100 times better.
Oh, thank you.
You know you are. Yeah. Come on now.
Well, I put my clothes, I hang them up now. I'm only I just turned 67. I feel very comfortable hanging up my clothes after I take them off instead of throwing them on the bed or on a chair and getting to them later, right? It does take some discipline, though. But, you know, when I'm living with someone who's a clean freak, then I have a choice. I can continue to throw my clothes anywhere and always have arguments, or I can hang them up and not have an argument. I mean, what's easier?
And then somebody could say, well, why does Di have to win on this one?
I don't see you as winning.
No, but you know what I'm saying. Well, I just like a messy room, you know. So why does it matter?
Okay, so why does it matter? I think it matters because we need to live in a compatible manner. And I think compatibility is something that you and I have. But we, like when you talked about relationship dance, we really had to figure out how we were going to live together. And I think when people move in together, they don't really think about things like that. We didn't. And then they just surface. And so it's how do you deal with something as simple as not putting your clothes away?
And leaving dishes in the sink. All of those types of things people have problems with. One part of the couple, and they fight about those types of things. And how you spend money. I mean, we didn't put our money together until like 7 years later when we decided we were going to buy a house together. I think that's when we put our monies together. And that took trust for us to do that. So I'm thinking about money and being at San Francisco State together and meeting you.
Who had no money.
You were kind of a poor student, I would say. Would you?
Well, yes. I mean, my family was in Capitola, Santa Cruz area. And I did get a $1,000 loan from the bank that my dad helped me get. But that meant I had $100 a month. And that's the money I had to live on.
Is that rent included? Was that?
Well, my dorm was paid for. I don't really remember anything about living in the dorm or paying for my food or anything. But I know I paid for all of my college myself. My parents couldn't help me. And so I paid for everything. But when I moved in with my friend in Noe Valley, I had $100 a month as my budget. And that's what I gave them for rent. And then in return, they got food stamps. And so I always had food to eat, but it was their food that they got with food stamps. And then you came along.
I was surprised, though, that you didn't have much money. Your shoes were, like, worn out.
I had one pair of pants, one pair of shoes, probably two shirts, and I didn't care. I did not care.
That's the issue. Yeah. Because remember, I was talking to you. I said, why don't you just go get a job?
But then I couldn't play softball.
Yes, you could have. I worked at the school because I worked and I knew people. In different restaurants on campus. It was fun. I had sandwiches when I wanted them. I worked at the fruit stand, and I left you food because I really felt sorry for you, though, really. I left you peanuts and fruit and sparkling water because I worked. And I knew people worked at the sandwich shop. And then I worked at the depot. You would come up and I'd give you ice cream cones.
I know. You were such an angel, a lifesaver, really. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't realize how much money meant to people. I really, when I was being raised, we had no money. I never had spending money in my wallet. I didn't have a need for it. I had all my meals at my house and my mom and dad. I had enough clothes. I mean, I had all my needs were met. I didn't have that urge to go shopping and to buy this and that. And I'm sure I felt a lot of guilt if I did spend money on anything. Like, I remember one time spending $1 on a hamburger, and I was like, oh, I just spent $1 on a hamburger. I don't know. And I felt so guilty. And
wow.
Yeah. So money, I think that we've come a long way with our money because, yeah, you know, it's different now. Yeah. You know, I'm retired.
You don't give me allowances like I did when no. I gave you $5 to catch the Muni and give you money. Yeah. I was looking for a rich woman, not a poor one.
Well, you did not find a rich woman, but rich in my soul, but just not in, you know.
Yes, it was very much in your soul. And I knew something there because, I don't know, I feel like angels were watching over us when we got together, yeah, like put us together, like for some reason it was.
And I don't really, to this day, know exactly what you saw in me. Because here I was, this, you know, person that had no money. I wasn't confident. I didn't have a sense of who I was. I played softball. That's how we met. And I played the flute. But that's about it. Mm-hmm. I really didn't have much of a beingness, I would say. And it's like, what did you see?
Well, it all started with my team. When they were talking about this person in the stalls because, you know, I was lesbian back then and I knew it, but my teammates, you know, and they are all lesbians too now, but nobody was talking about it to each other. Only maybe they were and I was with somebody else, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one day we were on a trip to, like, I don't know, Humboldt or Sac or Chico, somewhere we were going to play basketball. And they were talking about this person, Sheridan. It's like, what? Like, oh, another lesbian somewhere?
Who didn't know she was a lesbian?
I know, right? And so eventually that started it. So I befriended Sheridan because here I am in this van talking about you. And I'm saying, hey, y'all need to stop talking about this person. She's not even here to talk, you know, talk back or defend herself. You know, here I am defending you, the lesbian, right? So you didn't even know you were a lesbian. You're working it out anyways.
Yeah, working it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so anyways, I just befriended you. And when I met you, you were kind and loving and gentle and caring. And that was enough. I didn't know I was going to be taking care of you, though. No, I'm just teasing. But no, it was really nice.
You're so sweet.
And really fun. Yeah, just really interesting looking back and doing this show.
And when I met you, I just saw somebody who was so fun. You were like always laughing and having a good time, and you knew everybody, and you were so comfortable in your skin. And you were this famous basketball player, which I did not play basketball. I played softball. And I remember being on the softball team and we were working out and I was thinking I was all hot stuff because I was playing first base. And then you all started, after about 3 weeks, all the basketball players came on. It's like, oh, there's the real softball players I see. And then I got kicked off first base and I went to right field or something. But
those were the days.
Those were fun. Those were fun days. Yeah. Really? And then we had a song when we met and we just started really loving each other. We had a favorite song that I'd like to play right now.
Oh, yeah.
It was by Heatwave called Always and Forever.
That was our beginning song.
That's one of our beginning songs. And we like to play it for everybody just to reminisce. We won't play the whole thing, but we'll play a little bit of it. And here it is, Heatwave, Always and Forever.
Always and forever, each moment with you is just like a dream to me that somehow came true. And I know tomorrow will still be the same, 'cause we've got a life of love that won't ever change. And every day, love me your own special way, melt all my heart away with a smile.
Wow, that was memories. I love that song.
It brings back, we don't listen to it all that often, but it sure brings back all those wonderful feelings. I remember dancing together at the bars to this with you.
I know. I love that line, take time to share, you really care.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's beautiful.
And we'll last forever. Mm-hmm. The lyrics, I mean, I was like listening to the lyrics again. That was powerful.
Very beautiful.
It did bring back the memories, didn't it?
Beautiful. Just beautiful. So where do we go from here? We're in the 80s now, and we're still trying to figure out what keeps us together, what kept us together. And I think you graduated from San Francisco State, and I dropped out. And people probably don't know that about me, but I did drop out of college, and I remember telling my parents that I was dropping out and I wanted just to go live with you, but I didn't come out to them. You were my friend.
Yes.
And they didn't really understand, but what could they do? They couldn't really do much. And I went back to college later and finished up and everything, but I had my first job, ever.
Yay. She was bringing money home.
Bringing money home, paying rent. You had a job and...
Oh, yeah, we had to make money. because we're going to have our own apartment. So,
yeah,
you got a job.
I remember your job was at a gas station. Yeah. And
The
bubble machine. And you had just graduated from college and you're working at a gas station. And I remember there was a little bit of an uncomfortability on my part. It's like, she just graduated from college and she's working at a gas station.
Yeah, that's all your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. They think, what is she doing working at a gas station?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was during that time. I think I wanted to do park and rec. I wanted to be a ranger or something. Mm-hmm. Proposition 13. I passed the test. I had a good high score, but they didn't hire me. They didn't hire people at that time because of that. But yeah, I made good money at the gas station because I was such a great worker. I got like, I don't know, my salary was like $325 or something, but we got commissions.
Yeah.
And it was a way for me to earn more money. And so, you know, I was hustling.
You were a hustler.
I got, hey, how you doing? Would you like an oil change? Let me check your oil. You know, you want like a car wash or waxed? You know, so I was like hustling my customers and they gave me good money. So
that's what I remember tips. About you. I mean, you just were so personable with people. I'm not like that, and I have never been like that, and I really admire that about you. And I think when we see each other in the world, I mean, that's one of the things that probably keeps us together, is just being amazed at how you navigate the world and how you just are. You're like a magnet. You've always been a magnet, and people come toward you because they love your light, in my opinion. They're attracted to you, and they want to be around you because you're always laughing and making them feel good and making them feel important.
Mm-hmm. And I ask people who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to know you, you know. I've always been that way. I want to know who you are. And so people feel that from me because I'm really friendly, and that's how I made a lot of money to help us buy our first home.
Yes.
And your first yellow Toyota.
Yes.
Truck.
Yes. Which I had no money for. You lent me the money. I mean, seriously, I was just like, po folk.
Yeah. I that was one of my dreams, Cher, though, really. It was to have my own house, my own privacy, my own control. And I was going to save money for that.
One thing I remember that was so great once we bought the house is it was a fixer-upper, and your family was so amazing. They came and they helped us. Your mom helped mm-hmm. us. We did everything ourselves. We put on a new roof by ourselves. We put in windows by ourselves. We fixed the plumbing. There was like holes in the bathroom floor. I mean, it was in a really bad shape. And you fixed everything, and you just directed me on what to do because mm-hmm. I had no experience with that stuff. And mm-hmm. we fixed up our house.
No, that was great.
With no experience.
I know. It was nice that the neighbor across the street told us how to start putting the roof on, and we did it.
We did it, and now I look at people putting on roofs, and it's like, I can't believe. We walked up the ladder with those tiles, the composition tiles.
I was thinking about that too, yeah.
Those are heavy. We were strong,
yeah.
And we were fearless because I didn't think about falling, and now I would never go on a roof.
And because we played softball, we played on basketball teams, we had like a team in Marin County, a team in San Francisco, we played a lot and we traveled a lot playing basketball and for me, basketball mostly, but softball.
We had team in Larkspur, San Francisco, Glen Ellen, mm-hmm. Petaluma. I remember playing for the Washoe House back in the 80s.
I know.
And we went to the Washoe House as our last of the season meal or something. We took first
celebration.
Place or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I thought to myself, who in the heck would live out here in the sticks? And it's like, it is crazy how now I see like the country is so gorgeous. And it's just how, you know, you change as you grow older.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice living out in the country, but we'll talk about that phase later. But we're in Marin County during this time when we first got our first jobs and our first home.
And then we decided, because I mentioned Diana's family, who we went and spent every weekend with, and Diana's mom was foster parenting. And then we started taking care of her foster kids on the weekends with Diana's nephews. We would do everything with those kids, and we just said to ourselves, like, well, why don't we become foster parents?
And that's when it all started. 33 kids later, and we count a few kids twice because they came back. But anyways, it was a journey. And so that was another learning for us. We had to be unified because kids would try and split us and stuff like that. But it was a great journey with most of our kids to help them and show them the way.
Yeah, I think kids who aren't emotionally disturbed, who are stable, still try to split parents up. You know, if they're mad at one, they'll go to the other one and like cuddle up to them and try to be nice and stuff. I mean, that happened to me. When my dad was mad at me, I would go to my mom. And when my mom was mad at me, I'd go to my dad. I mean, I guess that's just natural, but...
I didn't do that. But anyways...
No?
No, we didn't do that. Oh. We didn't do that split, honey. Oh. We had different rules and different parameters than you all did. My mom was clear. Mm. You didn't, you know, push against my mom. But yeah, so we were teachers and we wanted to show the kids a different way to be in the world and have different experiences and be creative and to build their self-esteem and, you know.
One thing that we did when we were foster parents that both you and I never had was we built in weekly family meetings.
Beautiful, yes.
And I think those were really, really important. I wish I would have had that as a kid. We would sit down with the kids every Sunday night for about an hour or two. And sometimes in the morning, Sunday mornings, and then we'd go out to lunch after as like the reward.
Saturday after. Yeah.
And we would talk about issues. And we had a template. So first thing we would do is hand out allowance, like what did they earn for the week, and we had chore charts and everything, and it was all mathematical, and we'd hand out their allowance and they had to keep track of the money that they spent over the week and show us their budgets, which I think is really important.
It's really important. They learn math that way, but now that you have calculators.
Oh, yeah.
But what was important about that, those meetings, were they were able to express to us, the parents, how they were feeling.
Yeah.
And to each other. If someone hurt one or the other, they were able to say, I have an issue I want to bring up, and that's with you share, with you die, or whatever. And those were very important. And then they got to hear from other people. So we each had an opportunity to bring up issues. But the last part of the meetings were about appreciating each other. And everybody had to go around and give each other appreciation. And that's so important. And I teach that right now, Cher, with my clients and their families, because everybody gets to be heard and seen, and that's what's important.
I think it's, if I would have had that growing up, I could have talked to my mom and dad about how I was being treated, how I didn't like how I was being treated, how I felt like I didn't have a voice. I mean, I could have had a voice if we'd had these meetings.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's not to criticize my mom and dad, because they did the best. You know, every parent does the best they can with the tools that they were given when they were being raised.
Exactly.
So you and I broke the cycle with our foster kids, mm-hmm. having these family meetings. And I hope that wherever they're at, they remember that and they incorporate that into their own families with their children. Mm-hmm. I hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it's really important. So the foster care helped us to even communicate better.
Yeah.
Right? And to teach communication.
Yeah, we had to talk to each other in the family meetings. I mean, we didn't bring up personal issues in those meetings, but we certainly brought up appreciations, mm-hmm. and they got to see us appreciate each other.
Right, exactly. And that was good, too.
Yeah, for everybody.
Yeah, and so, yeah, and we were able to, you know, sometimes talk to each other about something, you know, and we would not always team up against the kids. If they made a good point, I'd say, sure, you know, he's making a good point or whatever. They're making a good point.
Yeah. And that's tough, you know, when your partner, when you would say that about the kids and then I would have to like, you know, apologize or whatever. It's like, but I did, because it's important that kids see adults apologize and we partners apologize to one another in front of kids. I mean, people are not perfect, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's one of the things that keeps us together, kept us together, is no, we're not perfect, to hear each other's criticisms, our mm-hmm. critiques of one another, and then be able to take it and not get on the defensive. That's really super important. And I think those people who live alone, don't get that experience, mm-hmm. you know, to buck up against somebody mm-hmm. and to give and take. And I think it takes a lot of patience mm-hmm. to be able to do that with another person day in and day out.
Right, right. I like the word you use, defensive. And that happens a lot in couples. And I know we've done that many times, being defensive. So, you know, you have to work at not being so defensive and being able to listen and to hear what the other person is saying. And so that comes, that makes me think of trust. I trust that you mean well. I trust that you're not going to hurt me. You're not trying to hurt me. That's not your intention to hurt me. So I don't need to be defensive. I can just listen. And so we've learned to do that much better.
Yeah.
It does over the years.
It takes a lot of trial and error, I guess you could say, over and over and over and over of each situation that comes up. Because situations are going to come up.
Come up, yeah. So you have to stop. We just have to stop and realize. And, you know, I used to always say to you, Cher, I say, Cher, you're so sweet and so kind, but you can be so stubborn sometimes. You just want to get the last word in. And then I go, I say, Cher, you can stop now. No, you keep going. And then you keep going. And then, you know, it's just interesting how we do our little bickering sometimes.
Yeah. People are going to kind of wonder, like, well, so what do you do when you're bickering, and how do you not bicker? And I think the more familiar that two people are, the more the bickering happens. But I think there's a time where you just realize that bickering isn't even important anymore. It's just like, listen to Diana, hear what she has to say. Does it make sense? Yes, it does. All right, fine. Move on. Say, okay, change whatever I need to do and move on, because it doesn't make sense to just keep belaboring things and going on and on and on about nothing.
Exactly.
You know, and I think, like I said before, I think I said it before in the show, it's like ego. There's so much ego involved in power struggles. And I think sometimes it's best just to drop the ego if you can. Mm-hmm. And just see the situation for what it is. And you know, do you want a dirty house? No. Well, then what are you going to do to fix it? Right? It's just like, it's not about who's right and who's wrong. It's like, we want to live in a clean house. So it takes work to live in a clean house. Mm-hmm. And you keep telling me now in present time, like, oh, if I wasn't here, you'd be living in a pigsty. And it's like, I just, you know, that's one of my frailties, I guess. One of my challenges. I don't see dirt. I'd rather go play my flute. I don't see dirt. And I know there's people in the world that are like me, right out there. Like, you want to just create and do your art and not worry about the day-to-day things.
I know. Well, I'm not that perfect. I mean, there's cleanliness and there's cleanliness. So anyways, that's good on that one, the defensiveness. So yeah. If you can hold down off and be aware of when you're being defensive. What are you protecting? So I think that's the key. What are you protecting on the inside? What hurt, what trauma, what whatever, what, you know, what are your fears?
Yeah, I think if people are aware of their triggers, mm-hmm. which takes a lot of work to know what a trigger, what makes you upset in a instant, can you go from 1 to 100 and it flash? And it's, if you can, and if you do, it's like, what is that thing that makes it you so mad or so quickly, so fast? And to figure out what that is and why your partner is bringing that out of you, and what can you do to fix that? Because, you know, if I have a trigger and Diana triggers it, someone else is going to trigger it too. So I might as well work on it with someone who loves me and who I trust, who's not going to hurt me. Work on it with her. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'm going to have to work on it with someone else in another situation who might not have my best interests in their heart.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I say to couples. Yeah. You know, the issue is the issue. So you're going to work it out here with this person, or you're going to work it out over there. So at least attempt to work it out here mm-hmm. and see what happens. So, yeah, I love what you're saying.
Yeah, so I think it's time for another song, Di, and we have a beautiful song that we loved in the 80s that we're talking about called Endless Love, And this version that we're going to play for you is Luther Vandross and Mariah Carey singing Endless Love. And we just absolutely loved it.
We love it. Loved it. And also we loved Lionel Richie and Diana Ross singing it as well. Mm-hmm. But we're going to play this version.
Yeah. So enjoy, everybody.
My love, there's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.
Ooh. My first love,
yeah,
you're every breath that I take, you're every step I make.
So Endless Love was so beautiful, and it really brings back memories, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was really, I love that song. It just feels so good when we hear those. It just brings back the memories of back then,
yeah,
and how we met and how we went through this journey of life together.
Yeah, and it is endless, I mean, still.
Oh.
So in the 90s, that's when we both went back to school.
Mm-hmm.
I went back, finished my BA in music and got my teaching credential, got my master's in special ed, and you?
I worked at the group home. I didn't stay at the gas station forever. I mean, I could have, not forever, but they didn't give me a position that I wanted, but that's a long another story. But I worked at the group home, and I felt like I could do more with the kids there. Instead of taking them down and taking them to the padded room. And so I went back to school, got my master's in psychology, because that's the field I felt like I should have been in anyways.
It seems like the perfect field for you.
Yeah, yeah. In that, say why you think.
Well, you always have been so wise in how you handle people and how you handle kids without any kind of formal education, quote unquote. It was just natural for you. And I think what you wanted to do is get a degree so that you could pursue a career in what comes naturally anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the perfect fit.
Right on. I was just testing to see if you really got me.
Do I got you, Don?
You got me. So, yeah. So we're still doing foster care. We're still playing sports. We're still young enough to play sports.
We had such a good time.
So much fun.
Mm-hmm. Fun is so important in a relationship. And I think sometimes people get so serious that they forget to laugh. Mm. And laughter is really, really important.
Laughter has saved us. No, I love to laugh.
Sometimes we have these really hearty belly laughs that we can't just, like one time I was imitating all your family members, remember?
Oh my God.
And each person, and it got more and more funny. It's just like really crazy.
That's great. And remember the time we went to the movie and the movies, and it was just, you and me, we had our cheese. We had a big block of cheese, and we were eating it with some French bread and some grapes and stuff. And then a piece of the cheese fell and broke, and it rolled into the aisle.
It rolled down the center aisle?
Yeah. And you know, they had what do you call those? Movie guards at the back watching. Back in the day. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, I remember getting up and going to get our cheese, and we couldn't stop laughing.
Oh, we laughed so hard. But anyways, we love, Cher and I love that about you, that we really have fun. You have to have fun in your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You have to laugh. We love eating good food together. We love, you know, those really important shared activities.
Games. Pinochle. Oh my
goodness.
We love
playing games.
Love pinochle and cards, and finding friends that love to play with us is
Pictionary.
Really important.
Just different games. Just mm-hmm. laughing and enjoying ourselves and eating good. And spirituality is important to us as far as going to the sweat lodges and you playing your music, your Native American flute.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful, Cher.
Thank you.
And they those times are so important for me in this relationship.
Yeah. Going to the sweat lodges, it's in the Lakota tradition, and learning the songs and learning the traditions has been really important to both of us, and we love it. And I think doing stuff spiritually together deepens our relationship. So even sitting by a fire, campfire,
yeah.
You know, we're lucky enough to have a place on our property to have campfires, small, of course. And just I'll play my flute, silver or native, and Diana can drum or not. And we just sit there and look at the flames and talk. And it's just so beautiful of a situation. And we can even do rituals out there. And I think doing stuff together like that is really, really important. It brings us closer together. And doing stuff on our own is very important too. Mm-hmm. So for me, music and art are like the two things that I love doing on my own, that I, you know, I'm my own best company in those moments. And then I love sharing my music, and I'm getting to the point where I love sharing my art as well. It's taken me a little bit longer to do that, but I'm slowly coming out as an artist and musician and believing in myself and having Diana there to help me believe in myself, to help me, to push me, to nudge me, to encourage me. Oh, we said that at the same time. It's just been a real gift to me in my own evolution.
Mm-hmm. And same with me. I am, you know, after getting my PhD and I've been just doing so much and writing children's books. And Cher, you've just been encouraging me and supporting me through it all. And now this other adventure I started, being a playwright and director and producer. You've always been there to brainstorm with me and help me and believe in the work that I'm doing and the service work. I call it service because I'm always trying to educate people and inspire people, encourage people.
And you take on topics that are very controversial, and you know, you have your particular outlook on things, and you bring your voice to the stage through your characters that you develop. And it's just pretty phenomenal, Diana, what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
Really, kudos to you. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, honey. What,
and you should mention the name of your theater company, just, you know.
Our Lives Matter Theater Company.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still working at it. It's still new. Still learning how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But the work, when I can create a play or write a book, children's book, just to teach and be of service. And your music is of service, definitely. So many people are impacted by your music. It just moves me when you play deeply from your soul.
That's one thing that you've always been on my case about, is that, you know, I grew up as a classical flutist and I didn't know how to play without music, without notes. And you would say, just play from your soul. And I'd say, well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And now I know.
Mm-hmm.
I really know what that means. And it's like you helped free me, Di. You really did.
Thank you.
And I thank you for that.
Yeah.
That's a gift for life,
right?
What you've gave me.
Thank you so much. I love that card you gave me years ago. What is that one about an angel?
Oh, when you were born, God appointed you angel.
Yeah, and I've always felt you that for me, and you feel that from me to you.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So when it's right, it's right, and that's part of the longevity. You just have to trust.
I always feel like our relationship is like we have that foundation that you build a house on.
Mm-hmm.
You have that strong cement on the bottom. Like your house would not exist without a strong foundation. And the wind can maybe blow out your windows, but your foundation is always going to be there. And so I feel like for us, that our foundation is trust. And no matter how many arguments we get in, or how much we push each other's buttons, or, you know, get in little fights or whatever it is, you know, that makes people want to leave relationships, we have that trust that we know we love each other and we're just going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we take a break from each other. So we need some time alone. So what?
If we're challenged by something out in the outside world, we know that that foundation is solid. And that's a beautiful metaphor. I love using that metaphor. So outside interests, it's really important. to a relationship that's been helping us. And the next thing, you know, intimacy.
Well, I just want to say one more thing
about
that.
Okay, go ahead.
And that is, I think a lot of people, when they're in a couple, they feel like they have to do everything together. Mm-hmm. And I don't agree with that. I think people need alone time. I think people need time to pursue their own interests. And now, if the interest of your partner is the same as your interest, then great, do it together. But there's got to be something that you like to do that maybe your partner doesn't. And I, you know, a lot of people put the sacrifice that because they want to be with their partner. But I really encourage people, the listeners out there, to pursue what fills you up.
Yeah.
You know, and it might not be with your partner, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're being disloyal. You're satisfying that soul part of mm-hmm. the yearning part of your soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that leads me into the next part, the parts that you do share together, that you do make time for each other, which is really important to have that balance. You have your outside world, you have your inside world. And intimacy is so important to me. I remember when I graduated with my master's, when I got my license for my MFT, and going to school in psychology, they say, well, that's one of the reasons people break up when you go into psychology, if your partner is not going to be on that same path with you. And I remember we got to that inroad where it was about, Cher, are you in this? I mean, who are you really? I mean, I wanted to know more of you. I wanted you to go a little deeper because I was going deeper in these psychology courses. And so that was a hard time. But you really worked at showing up and really allowing your soul to speak and be vulnerable with me. And that is so important. Intimacy in a relationship and connecting on that deep level. Being able to talk about the hard issues is so important.
When you would ask me questions, I mean, it's easy to say, I don't know.
Like, yes.
Why do you do that? How do you feel that? Why do you feel that? It's like, I don't know. And you wouldn't accept that any longer. Mm-hmm. Then that means I couldn't say that any longer. So I had to know.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't know for a lot of my life, you know.
Mm-hmm. But your journey, I mean, that's a powerful journey.
Yeah.
And me, the opposite, meaning not the opposite, but I needed to learn how to accept nurturance, something I wasn't used to in my family, which my desire was, I wanted it, but not being able to be vulnerable enough to ask for it in the way that I wanted it. Mm-hmm. And so I had to learn to ask for a certain type of nurturance from you. And we worked it. I mean, you know, it's hard sometimes. In the beginning, it was hard to ask for what you want and need, but you have to. Otherwise, you get bitter, you get angry, you get, you know, and a lot of people would go in outside the relationship to get what they want. But communication, again, here we go. Talk about what your needs are because you matter. Each part of the relationship matters.
Yeah.
So nurturance is really important. That was important for me mm-hmm. to feel nurtured and loved. So now I can just roll over into your lap and you rub my head and you can do the same with me or, oh, Di, I need a back rub right now or whatever.
Yeah, it takes a while to trust that your partner will be there for you when you ask. But you know, once you ask and they're there, it's like, well, you're not so hesitant to ask again.
Yeah, but we talk about it. We have to talk about what we want and what we need and what we like, what we don't like. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to know that we are still intimately, sexually involved with each other. And I know a lot of couples that I work with are not, you know, something is lost during that time. And, you know, and that's important in relationship, most relationships.
Absolutely.
And so all those things are really important for a healthy relationship and to stay involved. And right now when we have our friends over and people around us, they see the joy that we have. They see us having fun And they just so like blown away, like, you two are still having fun with each other. And COVID, when the pandemic happened,
I mean, it was hard for a lot of people. And it was hard watching the news. But personally, it was really, really fine. It was fine. It was fun.
Inside the home.
We just had a blast together. We are so fortunate to really like each other. Really like being around you because you're a heck of funny. And you're thoughtful and you're strong and you have such vision and you can build anything and you can do anything and you can just write anything. And it's just, nothing's never ending with you. There's always something coming.
Thank you for all those nice compliments. I should acknowledge them. But I can say those same things to you. Thank you for managing, keeping our household alive and working. Thank you for your energy and your support and your belief in me. Mm-hmm. And you are an incredible musician. You touch me every time you play your flute. You're very wise. I love seeing you grow and become the leader that you are.
Thank you.
You're very special. Your heart is huge. You taught me how to open my heart. There's so many things about you. I see that you're so generous with other people, with your heart, with your kindness. You're thoughtful of other people. You know, I've learned a lot from you as well.
Thank you, Di.
And so, so thank you for being you, Cher, and thank you for joining me on this journey of 45, 46 years.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
We'll do this again at 50.
At 50?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're going to have to wait.
They have to wait 5 more years and then we'll do another show in 50 when we're celebrating our 50th anniversary.
Wow.
That'll be 2027.
Oh. Wow.
So this has been really, really fun reminiscing and saying happy anniversary to you, spending our anniversary like this.
Yes, yes. Happy anniversary, my love.
Happy anniversary, Diana.
Yes, it has been a pleasure reminiscing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're going to have to end our show.
And we do have one more piece of music that we're going to play for you. Alicia Keys sings If I Ain't Got You. And that is the song that we played at our wedding in 2008 when we were legally married. So after we end our show, stay tuned and listen in to Alicia Keys singing her beautiful If I Ain't Got You.
So remember, if you communicate openly,
if you embrace your similarities,
if you respect your differences,
and have fun,
you are on the right track to creating the relationship you desire.
Because of our joy, we are able to spread joy and make our world just a little bit better.
Yes, this is Living Proof, and we look forward to having you next month.
Until then,
good night.
That the physical things define what's within. And I've been there before, but that life's a bore so full of the superficial.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.